This episode of The Drive with Lante and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at twomenchampagne.com for a free estimate.
Yeah, good evening. It is The Drive with Tay and Piper. I'm Lante. Derek Piper to my left, Trevor Valise in the other room to my right. Ken weighed in. Thank you, Ken. Says that was a cool interview. Good work. Gordon Voigt is a very entertaining gentleman. And again, he's worked his butt off on this all-time five. I know that his cohort at WAND and some of the guys over there, Joey Wagner, who covers Illinois for the Decatur Herald Review, Gordon was part of this as well, but they did Eric Lee, who works for 1050 ESPN over in Decatur. They did a food draft in Decatur I thought was pretty cool. They went through that, and they all Zoomed their draft, so I thought it was kind of neat. How weird is it going to be, boys? Trevor, I'll patch you in on this one. Patch, that's an old school term right there. How weird is it going to be to see Roger Goodell at his home saying with the first pick of the National Football League draft, the whatever, take Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrows. How weird is that going to be? That's going to be really strange.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be different, that's for sure. No one's going to boo him.
No, right?
Because he's in his
basement.
It'd
be funny if he had his wife and kids like in the background going, boo, you know?
I'd actually give him a lot of respect if he had a little kid pop in from the corner and just start booing him.
I think he should do it, man. I think he should do it.
Not that he's got a lot of great karma right now anyways.
Why does every commissioner get booed?
Some don't.
I don't think Adam Silver does. No.
What is
Goodell, it's been just a series of reactive, not proactive moves, starting from Ray Rice and the video that came out there to everything that's come after.
I mean,
that,
the NHL, now his name is
Gary Bettman.
He gets booed.
I don't know why he gets booed. You could probably tell me more than I could.
Bud Selig used to get booed.
Yeah.
I mean, Bud Selig.
Well, now Rob Manfred, I can assure you, will get booed after the Astros thing.
I just don't get it. It's kind of like, oh, it's the cool thing to do now, so we're going to boo the commissioner. I'm like, what? What are we doing?
I mean, it's like the sports version of thanks, Obama. You just start throwing that out, even though it has nothing to do with Obama sometimes.
It's just kind of weird to me.
When you're in a position of that much power, someone's going to find problem with what you're doing, I guess.
And Adam Silver, I think, no doubt, followed the best commissioner ever.
David Stern.
I mean, David Stern is probably the best commissioner a sport has ever had, right? I shouldn't say that. That's unprofessional. No, that's not unprofessional. That's irresponsible. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look. Because, you know, you'd have commissioners that started baseball and everything, so that's probably the wrong thing to say. But in my time, David Stern, what he was able to do with the NBA is incredible.
Yeah, and he was blessed with Michael Jordan in the 90s.
Yes, Bird and Magic,
of course. But really able to market those guys and really capitalize on the stars in the NBA and also globalize the game.
Yeah.
A lot of reasons to give him credit.
What's funny is, as a young fan, I only remember him for blocking Chris Paul to the Lakers.
That's right.
And I hated that. I'm like, dude, don't mess with teams' trades.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That didn't happen very often.
No, it didn't.
Bud Selig should be commended for the wild card teams. I mean, that, I think, has really rejuvenated baseball and helped baseball.
He had pretty good approval ratings across board, right? I mean, he was kind of like goofy towards the end, right?
Other than the All-Star policing game. Of steroids.
Well, the
All-Star game.
The All-Star game determines home field.
That was bad.
That was kind of dumb. And then they played like 20 innings the one time and a tie. You know,
at least it looks like he cares about baseball, though. Rob Manfred doesn't even look like he knows what he's doing.
No, I agree. Adam Silver's a weird-looking dude. Is he like 6'8"?
He's tall.
He's got two things working against him. He's tall and skinny, and he's got the ears that are
unfortunately
large.
He does. Ears, no hair, glasses.
No hair.
Yeah, he's bald.
So
he's got the Van Pelt look.
Kind of.
They're at ESPN. Any luck with pulling in Van Pelt?
I mean, I'll just be honest with you. We've tried twice. We have a direct connection since we're an affiliate.
Yeah.
No such luck.
I say we move on.
Maybe I should shoot for someone other than, like, the most well-known sports person in the world.
Maybe start lower. Let's start our expectations
lower. Start with, like, Reese Davis and work our way up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Reese would be pretty high on that list too, right? We may want to start a lot lower than those guys and just see what we get to. That would be cool. How about Kenny Mayne?
Kenny Mayne?
Kenny Mayne is a dry-witted dude. I bet he'd be a hard radio interview. Because he'd be funny, but it'd be hard because you wouldn't know when to talk. You wouldn't know what he's...
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that you have to see him, I think, to appreciate his humor. Because if you watch him, then it's funny. Jimmy Roberts,
from NBC. Is he NBC?
I don't even know who you're talking
Jimmy
about.
Jimmy Roberts is one of the best he's one of the best storytellers I've ever seen. He does a lot of golf and stuff. Jimmy Roberts would be really cool. All right, okay, you, Derek, I'm trying to stall this.
I was
going to
say, I think you're delaying.
I'm delaying as much as I can. By the way, Jason Pat, blogabull.com, he's the co-host of Cash Considerations. He covers the Chicago Bulls, and we're going to ask him about AK, Arturis Karnisovas, Karnisovas, the new VP of basketball operations. Gar Foreman let go today. John Paxson now in a different role. So we're going to talk to Jason at the bottom of the hour and try to figure out if the Bulls will ever be good again in my lifetime. They're running out of time here. So we'll do that. I've only got maybe 30, 40 more years.
We've got four more decades to get their stuff together.
Trajectory of the way they're going, I'm not sure I'm seeing it. But
I don't think you can get Bronny James at 7.
No,
probably not.
Well, maybe get out of the 7 hole.
Yeah, that might be
the first thing I would do if I was the owner of the Bulls. I'd be like, okay, either start losing or start winning one of the two. Don't draft 7. So wins above replacement is the new sabermetrics. When did that become
a thing?
It's
not even new. It's been around since like 2012?
That's what I mean.
13?
Is it in the last 7, 8 years?
In this past decade, yeah.
Yeah, war is not new. It's the launch angles, the spin rates. They're still fairly, fairly new.
So war is what baseball uses to determine a player's value to their team. Did I say that correct?
And keep in mind, it's the average player named Joe Schmo. It's not like a specific player who's average.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think every year they take literally every player's stats and create an average stat line.
Oh, do they?
And that's like baseline zero war.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like you're picking like, okay, Matt Wieters is going to be our war player this year. You're taking everybody's stats and compiling what the average line of those stats would have been.
Because they've gone back, as Derek will show me in this exercise that I'm going to fail, they'll go back and show like what Stan Musial's war was to the Cardinals. So they had to have gone back to that season to figure out what the base level war was and then figure out. I didn't know they did that.
War is like 1, that means let's say David Bodie's war is 1. And Matt Wieters' war is 0. That means if the Cardinals had David Bodie on their team and the Cubs had Matt Wieters on their team, the Cardinals would be 1 win better and the Cubs would be 1 win worse.
Okay.
FanGraphs explains war as it's an estimate to answer this question. If this player got injured or then their team had to replace them with a freely available minor leaguer or a guy from their bench, how much value would the team be losing? So if your war is 6, you're losing 6 wins.
I make fun of it, but I understand that it is something that I know a lot of executives, probably GMs,
it's not the best stat out there. I'm not going to sit here and be like, you should look at war and nothing else.
Yeah,
right.
Because some guys who have an extreme playing time advantage over another might have a better war just because they're playing every
day. That's true. That's a good point.
So what I figure we do, waging wars, I'm going to take like head-to-head battles, two players. In some instances, I'm going to give you their baseball card stats and ask you whose war is better because you also have to consider positioning.
Okay. Yeah. Catcher as opposed to right fielder.
It's going to be fun. Let's just start off.
Okay.
They still haven't figured out catcher, by the way. They need to come up with a stat.
Yeah, just start with Yachty being the best ever and then go from there.
So one of my personal favorites, Rick Yankiel as an outfielder.
Okay.
Or Kosuke Fukudome, both primarily played in center.
Oh, my goodness.
Say the Ankiel's best year. We're taking best year, not a career war.
Okay.
So Ankiel's best year as an outfielder in 2008.
So at their peak.
Fukudome's best year in 2009. I'll provide some more details, but just gut feel, who do you think had a better peak between those two?
In a weird way, I think I know who the better war is because this one is almost like a trick question. But I'm going to go with what I think should be the right answer. That'd be Fukudome.
Okay. I would have also said Kosuke.
Yeah, okay. So Ankiel in 2008 hit .264, had 25 bombs.
Did he really?
71 RBIs in 120 games. Fukudome hit .259, 11 home runs, 54 RBIs. So hitting-wise,
interesting.
Ankiel much better.
And defensive, I mean.
Defensively, see, that's what we remember is him throwing dudes out from the wall.
But overall, was
Ankiel
he that good?
Ankiel had 8 errors, 5 in center, 3 in left. In those when he played left field, he only had 16 starts. He had 3 errors. So his offensive rating is at a 12.9. His defensive rating is at a negative 11.2.
Wow!
His WAR, according to Fangraphs, is 1.7. Fukudome, along with his hitting, only had 2 errors all year. 4.8 offensive WAR, a net 0, so average defensively, 2.4 WAR.
So Fukudome
better than Ankiel.
That's incredible. Okay, so I would assume
plot hole in it too, where you could hit 60 home runs, but if you also had 20 errors, it's going to devalue you a lot because those errors might cost you a game, therefore a win, therefore you're losing your WAR.
Okay, got it. Here, okay, I'm Bill from Troy. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate this, but this is another reason why I just don't even talk sabermetrics. Bill said, you guys are wrong. A replacement-level player is not the median value of a major league player. It's a freely available player, so essentially guys that would be invited to spring training on two-way contracts. I just want to see a kid and say, all right, I think he's going to be good. I want to go back to the Walt Jocketty. That kid looks pretty good. Let's play him.
There is the WAA, so wins above average player. And then replacement is supposed to be someone that's not.
Okay, playing. So I guess I misspoke there. So what's the average stat line? Because they do a new one every year. Are they averaging all minor league players' stat lines?
I don't know, man. Richard from Rantoul says his WAR by position or just general player? Do they establish the WAR like all catchers?
Well, I think it's just general WAR.
Okay, general. Okay.
I mean, you can sort it by if you take general WAR and then you look at the top 10 right fielders and their general WAR, you're creating a top 10 right
that's
fielder
true.
WAR.
All right. I like this, though. Okay. So we were right. Kosuke.
This one's tougher.
Oh, boy.
It's supposed to be tough.
Like that could, okay.
Highest peak WAR, so best year. Yadier Molina or Jim Edmonds. Yadier Molina, 2012. I don't want to give you the stats here. And I think this shows positionally, but also defensively. So, 2012, Yadi Molina, 315 average, 22 bombs, 76 RBIs, and 138 games. Jim Edmonds, 2004, 301 average, 42 home runs, 111 RBIs. Yadi was fourth in MVP voting, Gold Glover. Edmonds, fifth in MVP voting, Gold Glover.
See, the thing with Yadi is I feel like he's so sound defensively that any offensive production he gives you is just an insane boost to his value.
I would agree with
you. Like he's working on such an elevated baseline because he's never going to make a mistake defensively that in a year when he does have 22 bombs, he's like enormously valuable.
Although in this example, because Jim Edmonds is widely considered one of the better defensive center fielders.
Well, that's what Derek said about both Gold Glove
wins. Oh, man. You know what makes this fun is that I don't understand WAR and how they get to it. So I don't
just
know.
Say who would you rather have?
I don't know if the 44 homers. I'd rather have Yadi.
Because I think that's part of the conversation you can then have is if you're starting a team, would you rather have the catcher that hits 315
yes.
is insanely good defensively, or the center fielder that hits 42 bombs and is also
and can catch
insanely
everything.
Good defensively?
Infield or out, Jim Edmund. I'm going to go catcher. In this situation, so I'm going to go Yadi.
Well, I mean, if they're both awash defensively, then I guess you just give it to whoever has the better offensive numbers in terms of just statistical computer WAR.
But we don't know if they're awash defensively. We're going to find out.
All right. It's a bit of a trick question. Baseball Reference gave both of them a 7.2 WAR.
Oh, wow.
But Fangraphs has a winner. Yadi at 7.7 WAR, a 20.9 offensive grade, 34.4 defensive grade.
There you go.
His caught stealing percentage, 48%. He threw out 48% of runners trying to steal.
Wow.
Edmonds, an 8.3 WAR.
Wow.
56.3 offensive rating, but only an 8.2 defensive rating.
What? So you're
for that particular season.
You were the best defensive center fielder because you were awarded the Gold Glove. You were the best National League center fielder, but yet your defensive WAR was only 8. And Yadi's was
35.4.
So you were right, Trevor, in terms of basing Yadi's.
And I know that Edmonds had higher grades in different seasons, so maybe he just wasn't as good defensively that year in particular.
Maybe.
That year, side note, walk-off home run in the 12th, Game 6 against the Astros.
I do remember
in LCS.
That. When he put his hands in the air and just went, yeah.
Yep.
So Jim Edmonds, Jimmy Ballgame, with a better WAR than Yadi.
That was the Cardinals edition. Now we got a Cubs edition.
That's crazy.
Highest peak WAR, two guys that had huge seasons on the corners for the Cubs. Derek Lee in 2005, or Chris Bryant in 2016?
Oh, now this sounds like a trick question all over the place.
I thought you were going to throw a Ramos Ramirez in there, too.
Yeah, baby. Man, that guy could hit.
What year for Derek Lee?
2005.
Did a Ramos Ramirez play on every team in the National League Central except the Cardinals? I think he did.
Yeah, he played on the Pirates for a while. He played on the Brewers for a while.
Reds, I think.
Played on the Cubs. Did he play on the Reds?
Did he play on the Reds?
I don't know if he did.
I think he played on the Pirates.
He might as well. He killed the Cardinals.
Oh, he
murdered the Cardinals.
He is one of the top three guys that absolutely the Cardinals could not get out.
I'm serious.
He and Scooter Jeanette.
Scooter Jeanette, yeah.
I'm probably forgetting somebody because I'm young and I'm biased, but he may be the most underrated Cub ever.
Oh, Ramos Ramirez was incredible.
I mean, you did very little wrong.
No.
High average. Hit a ton of bombs every year.
He was incredible. He really was.
It happened to come in a bunch of years where, like, the only postseason memory was getting swept by the dot. And, like, there was nothing.
Right. Ramirez was incredible. And again, like Derek said, you're spot on. He killed the Cardinals.
Okay, so what was Derek Lee's line?
All right, you want the lines? Okay,
yeah,
here we go.
Let's do the lines.
That
doesn't sound good. Let's do the lines.
Forget how good Derek Lee was, potentially.
He was.
He didn't. 335 average,
man.
46 home runs, 107 RBIs.
See, those are good baseball card stats.
Chris Bryant in 2016, 292 average, 39 bombs, 102 RBIs. Bryant won the MVP. He was an all-star, won a World Series. Lee was third in the MVP race behind Pujols and Andrew Jones.
Wow.
Led the league in average. Doubles with 50. So he had 46 bombs and 50 doubles.
Good.
Highest slugging and OPS in the league.
Wow. See, if this isn't a perfect example of how average means nothing anymore. Chris Bryant won an MVP hitting 292, and nobody cares, right? And they shouldn't, right? Because now you've got on-base percentage, on-base plus slugging. Back when Derek Lee played, it's like, whoa, he hit 335? Holy crap. I don't. Maybe that's me. I'm arguing in my own head. See, I don't know. Does getting an MVP weigh in the voting of a war? It shouldn't.
It's a statistical
thing.
It's not a superlative thing.
Well, I'm going to go Derek Lee.
Yeah,
I would also tend to lean Derek Lee, but I don't know.
Defense plays into this.
Yeah, because Derek wasn't.
Derek Lee 7 WAR, 61 offensive rating.
Ooh.
Negative 14.2 defensive rating.
Wow.
There's a reason why he was at first base.
Right. He was not a very good defender.
Chris Bryant, 7.9 WAR.
Okay.
48.7 offensive rating, 6.3 defensive rating.
That's it.
Bryant's last 2 years, he's had negative defensive ratings. Now, he has had to play some outfield.
Yeah, that's true. So, who ended up winning it?
Chris Bryant, 7.9. Derek Lee, 7.
That is incredible. How did you even find those two to go about this?
That was a good comp, yeah.
That's a great comp.
Last one you're going to like or hate this one.
Ozzie Smith and Sean Dunstan.
No, we're going, well, we can do that. We got a lot of time. We got a lot of players. So there's a lot of ways we can go with this.
I feel bad I can't help you with this in terms of research because I don't know how you get to those points.
I'll bring some to the table this week.
Okay, I'll think of some matchups.
All right. We're going the negative side. Worst WAR.
See, I'd love to have like a Stan Musial against Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
Or Stan against Joe DiMaggio.
Right.
Or Gibby against Bob Feller. I mean, okay, I'll think of some. Maybe we'll ask the listeners. If you guys have a matchup, maybe you have a favorite player from the 80s on the Cubs and a favorite player from the 90s. You know, Sandberg against, I don't know. You know, Ron Say back in the day. That'd be kind of cool. Mark Grace against Derek Lee. Or if you're a Cardinals fan and you remember how good, like Vince Coleman, what does speed do for WAR? Vince Coleman against Tito Landrum. That'd be kind of weird.
I was trying to think of
Mark Pryor
against some other.
Oh, yeah.
Like really good peak 1 year.
Yes. How about Mark Pryor versus Kerry Wood? Although Wood should have the better. But not in a, who knows about a peak season.
Kerry
peak
Wood
season.
Had some sneaky offensive numbers, too.
Yeah, yes, he did.
If that factors in as a pitcher.
Yes, he did. I assume Tommy Herr has the best WAR of any player that's ever played. Best player ever.
I think Babe Ruth had a season where like it was literally like 35, which is just ridiculous.
Tommy Herr was 34.
Someone texted in Mark Grace versus Rizzo.
Okay.
Ooh, we could do that.
See, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Maybe today player against one of the best ever for your team. Well, we'll think it. We'll have Trevor and I, the least we can do is come up with some individual matchups.
A Baez against somebody.
Yeah.
Would be good.
Baez against Samber.
Yeah.
That would be cool. All right. Okay, go. Now, so now we're going the worst.
The last one, like, I have here.
Edwin Jackson.
Nick Bunto.
No. Someone that you would think of, Lon. Worst war. Brett Cecil in 2018.
Oh, God, I about spit up my water.
Brett Cecil in 2018.
Well, you'd have to find a healthy year, so how are you doing that?
Well, he had 40 appearances in 2018.
I'm kidding. He wasn't bad.
Or he was.
Well, okay.
Or Ryan Dempster in 2006.
Oh,
Ryan Dempster
is boring.
As a reliever, I'll give you the stat line, the baseball card stats. Dempster was the closer. He was 1-9 with a 4.80 ERA, 9 blown saves.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh.
Brett Cecil, 6.89 ERA, 40 appearances.
I'm going to go Dempster.
As the worst one?
No, oh, I'm sorry. No, Cecil is the worst one.
Honestly, I did not watch Brett Cecil in 2018, but the way you talk about him... I don't know.
He
I remember
was actually
Ryan
halfway
a,
decent that year.
Dempster as a closer was pretty disastrous, so yes. I'm going Dempster.
Okay.
Dempster had a WAR of 0.9.
Oh.
Brett Cecil had a WAR of negative 0.7.
There you go.
So you get a guy off the street,
think
and
about
you would have been 0.7 wins better.
Essentially, Brett Cecil, there is nothing good about you.
Think
nothing.
About how much that would hurt as a GM, though. If you look at a guy who's been on your 40-man roster all year who has a negative WAR, basically telling you, like Derek just said, if you just released him and grabbed some guy walking by, your team would be better than it is right now.
And not only that, but not only that is he's better hurt.
Well, because he's inactive.
So his WAR is zero when he's not playing.
He's a more valuable player.
He's more valuable when he's hurt.
His WAR was better last year when he didn't pick one game.
Well, then Brett Cecil knows he's helping the Cardinals. I never realized that.
At a price.
It. Good for you, Brett. At 40
yeah, don't
million
factor in
over
salary.
4 years.
That's, and that throws the whole
incredible.
Thing.
Incredible.
That was okay.
That was incredible.
There's a stat that values your salary compared to your stats too.
Well,
that one's kind of fun.
That'd be a fun. No, Derek, that was you scared you know what out of me today when you texted that. I got this WAR game with Lon. I'm like, no, that was awesome, and I want to continue to do that. We're getting some good ones in. Who would you match against somebody else? Somebody said Ty Cobb, Pete Rose. Interesting. We'll write some of these down and have Derek do some research on these. When we come back, Jason Pat, Blog a Bull. He covers the Chicago Bulls. We're going to ask him about, how do you say it? AK. I'm just going to say AK.
People are calling him Artie.
Artie. Okay, I'll just say Artie, VP of Basketball Operations. Gar Foreman now gone. We'll talk to Jason about all of that and where are the Bulls at going forward. We'll do it next to Drive.
This episode of The Drive with Lon Tay and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at twomenchampagne.com for a free estimate.
There will be parties again soon and family gatherings. There'll be parades and sporting events and concerts. To help our communities when they come back together, respond to the 2020 census now. Spend a few minutes online today to impact the next 10 years of healthcare, infrastructure, and education. Respond online today to make America's tomorrow brighter. Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
If you're a pro, Lowe's knows your job hasn't stopped. We're here to help with the supplies you need to make repairs and keep people's homes running smoothly at this important time. From our convenient curbside loading to job site delivery to savings on the products you need most, our focus is to help keep your business moving forward. Lowe's is open, and we're pro ready.
This is Mary Jurison, the office manager at CU Under Construction and CU Trade Services. When I started here 8 years ago, I was excited to work with such passionate owners. Little did I know how much that would inspire my passion into remodeling and building. At CU Under Construction and CU Trade Services, I know how much we care about your home. My team of ladies and our amazing crews are here for any of your home needs. Check out our website at CUUnderConstruction.com and theCUServices.com. The next time you have a home project or any type of service need, call us and see how we are building better together.
Are you looking to enhance your natural beauty and finally give yourself the image you deserve? Visit Advanced Aesthetics in Champaign. Dr. Curley and his professional team offer state-of-the-art cosmetic enhancement procedures in a comfortable and relaxed setting. Reviews have poured in about their friendly staff that's easy to talk to and always gives their patients peace of mind. For more information, be sure to visit their website, jkurleymd.com. That's jcurley with a K, md.com, or call their office today at 217-356-3850.
Two Men in a Truck is the leader in all things moving. When colleges and universities are canceling classes, Two Men in a Truck is at your service. If your family member needs to be moved home from college, contact your local moving experts. Moving and summer storage, Two Men in a Truck has the solution, along with a complete line of boxes, packing supplies, and services. Make the move home easy. Contact us at twomenchampaign.com to get an estimate today. That's a smart move.
Hey, at Honda BMW, they're offering 25% discount on repair through the end of April in an effort to keep their staff employed. They'll even come pick up your vehicle, perform all the repairs, and fully sanitize it. They'll use seat covers, floor mats, and gloves to help protect everybody's health and safety while they service your vehicle. You can visit Honda BMW off Neal at Burwash in Savoy. They're open. Call 356-0303 to check availability for their delivery service. That's 356-0303. So you're stuck at home and want to do some painting. Well, with their supply of both Benjamin Moore and PPG paints, Nix Paints is the area's premier painting supply store. You can view the products at BenjaminMoore.com. Once you've picked it out, call Nick, 356-5711. You can also email your order to NixPaints@gmail.com. Nick will deliver it to your doorstep for free without getting near you. They're open at John and Randolph, but you don't have to come in. Visit NixPaints.com for more information, and let's go paint something. Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lonte and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
We were talking about the Cubbies. It's the drive, by the way. Lonte, Derek Piper, Trevor Valise with us as well. We want you to listen to US 105.9. That's our country station here at Stevie J Broadcasting. Listen this Tuesday and Thursday at 6 o'clock for the Cubs Classic 2016 replay. They'll be airing. We'll be airing chosen games from the Cubs Network. Join us as we relive some of the 2016 playoffs and World Series games. Don't forget to tune in each Tuesday and Thursday on US 105.9. Why am I reading?
Say it again, Lon.
Why am I?
Say it again, but with passion.
I am not reading that again. From now on, Trevor Valise can read all the Cubs.
They're in chronological order too. So NLDS, NLCS, then World Series.
That'd be cool. I just did watch the Cardinals, the Fox Sports Midwest.
Okay, nobody cares.
Okay, yeah,
on.
2011, yeah. Game 6, best game ever. And then, of course, Game 7, I was at Busch Stadium, and that was fun. It is time to talk Bulls. And Derek Piper, you and Trevor, both the Bulls fans here. I'm a Sixers fan. Are they any good this year? They're weird. Yeah. They're like 500 or something. Maybe not.
They should be better.
They should be better. That whole thing hasn't worked. It just really hasn't worked. We're going to welcome in Jason Pat. Blogabull.com does a podcast called Cash Considerations. He's the co-host of that. You can follow him on Twitter at Bulls_J. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's a big day for the Bulls, finally making big changes in their front office with Arturis Karnaschovas coming in and Gar Forman getting fired and John Paxson moving over to his new role in this as a senior advisor.
I'm glad you said Artie's name. I'm going to leave it at Artie or AK. I'll leave it there. Let's start with him. What does it mean, him coming in? What are you excited about that he could bring to the table, and what worries you a little bit with him coming in?
On Cash Considerations, you mentioned, we just had a Nuggets expert on, TJ McBride, and he was kind of going in on what Bulls fans can expect from Arturis Karnaschovas, and it was really promising. He's very collaborative, very attention to detail. He's obviously he's got a great resume. He worked for Daryl Morey with the Rockets. He's been with the Nuggets for a long time, helped build this good Nuggets team. He's got all the international, did some international scouting, so he's got the international ties going on there. So he's got a really impressive resume. They even said it today at this press conference, just like when the Bulls were doing their search and just like asking around the league, like his name was coming up all the time. He's been up for this kind of job in other places as well. He obviously stayed in Denver until now, taking this big job. The Bulls say, and the reporting is out there, that he's going to have this full authority. Obviously, you do wonder, since Paxton is this, whatever, this senior advisor, like how much say he will have. What it's looking like is Paxton just kind of wanted to just like get out of that top job. They said today that he went to the front office in December and is like, a change needs to be made here. Like, I'll step down. He reportedly supposedly said he'd leave if Karnišovas wanted him around. Karnišovas apparently said he was fine. He'll use Paxton as a resource. So a lot of good things about Karnišovas and his resume. Like I said, we'll see what John Paxton actually does. He supposedly won't be around the team. But, I mean, if that's like any that's maybe one of the only concerns, you just wonder how much Paxton will be there. But a lot of the other, just a lot of what I've heard from Nuggets people and just around the league, it's been basically nothing but good things about Artie.
With Karnišovas, how important are the international connections? I know that's kind of how he got started with the Rockets, then moved over to the Nuggets, and they have Jokic, and you just look around the league, and Doncic comes in, Giannis is an international player. Just what he's able to do as far as his connections or just tap into the players that are coming over, how big of a consideration do you think that was for the Bulls, and particularly a draft that's going to have a couple of international prospects coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a positive to have a guy who's been around and all around the world, and he's got those connections. So maybe you find a guy. I mean, obviously, Luka Doncic was a phenom, and everyone knew about how good he was. But you find a guy like Nikola Jokic in the second round. Giannis was a first-round pick, but, I mean, he was just kind of a skinny dude, super raw guy coming out. So, I mean, if you can find those guys, maybe I don't want to necessarily call them diamond in the roughs, but having all those connections out there and getting to know some of those international players. And then he's obviously just got connections from around the league in general, and he's been talked about super highly from guys like Daryl Morey, from Tim Connolly. So it's definitely huge to have that. Because the Bulls have had some good international players across their history, but it's having this guy as well, just a good resource, and just having this kind of diverse front office is great.
Can you break it down for Bulls fans like myself who haven't honestly had a reason to pay too close of an attention, but after Derrick Rose and his injuries, just the inability to rebuild it, and you say you're going young, but then you bring in D-Wade and Rondo, and just the mess that it's been. The Bulls have been an organization that's not having been attracted to free agents of recent. So when you look at Gar Forman in particular, why do Bulls fans that are in it on the day-to-day, why did they hate him so much?
Yeah. I mean, you know, going back to D. Rose's injury, and John Paxton always likes to talk about how much D. Rose's injury set them back. But, I mean, basically going back to, I guess, that and, like, when Jimmy Butler was obviously a great draft pick, but then kind of after that, it's just a downhill, just a lot of misses. I mean, you look at, like, Doug McDermott trade was terrible. There was the whole thing with Tom Thibodeau and the rift there with the front office with Gar and Pax there. There were some missed draft picks. There was the whole thing where Tom Thibodeau wanted to draft Draymond Green. They drafted Marcus Teague. Fred Hoiberg was obviously a Gar Forman thing. They basically telegraphed once they were firing Tom Thibodeau that Fred Hoiberg was going to be the guy because he was a Gar Forman guy. That didn't work out. They obviously traded Jimmy, and I know Jimmy and his trainer had some not so nice things to say. And there's other crazy. Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times did a whole thing about Gar Forman a couple weeks ago, just kind of detailing some of the other issues there. There was talk about how he was using like Randy Brown as a spy in the front, in the front office, and that. They had like a reunion for Lou Alding this season, and that the players weren't really liked how Gar was like treating them, and a lot of the stories about how he wasn't very well liked. And I know Cowley tweeted again today about how that getting rid of Gar will help the Bulls in terms of like possibly attracting free agents. So like I said, I don't want to just like totally slander the guy because like I don't really know him personally like that, but like there's a lot out there about just how Gar Forman, just some of the negatives around him and the moves he's made and just like and his presence in the organization. So I think it's been a long time coming to make this type of move. So, and they finally did it. Karnišovas kind of talked about how he moved on because they just didn't really fit. Like their philosophies didn't really fit. And he thought that not getting rid of him would not help them move forward. So he made that call.
It's a good hour to do it because I just ripped Brett Cecil. So, I mean, if you got anybody else you want to get out, just go ahead and do it this hour. Visiting with Jason Pat, follow him on Twitter. It's @Bulls_J, and that's J-A-Y. I want to ask you, this is a simplistic question because I am not a huge follower of the NBA, and not a huge follower of the Bulls. And, you know, I'm a guy that grew up, and the Jordan era was incredible, don't get me wrong. And I know that, you know, some of the teams they've had through the years in the NBA have been fun to watch. But where did this thing all veer off course with Chicago in the last decade or so? I mean, was it Derrick Rose getting hurt against my Sixers? I mean, is that where it kind of went off course? I mean, they had a couple of good years, it seemed, with Thibodeau, you know, who was good defensively, but then Jimmy Butler leaves town. I mean, where did this kind of all go to the point where the Bulls aren't even a team you really want to watch?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely started with the Rose injury, but Thibodeau did keep them competitive. Like, Joakim Noah was the MVP candidate.
True.
They kept going to the playoffs. They in Thibodeau's last year, I mean, they had the Cavs, LeBron's Cavs, on the ropes in that playoff series, and they kind of fell apart and Thibs got fired. And basically since then, it's been just a total disaster. Like, Jimmy Butler did turn himself into a star, but there was some drama there. The whole three alphas, Wade and Rondo thing was clearly just like a last, like a half-baked effort to compete before they decided to rebuild. And then just the rebuild has not gone well. Like, Hoiberg did not work out. Jim Boylan's been a disaster. There have been a ton of injuries. Like, I don't want to say it's all injuries with these guys, but these young players haven't really developed as you'd hoped. Zach LaVine has turned into a nice player, but Lauri Markkanen has kind of stagnated. Wendell Carter has been promising, but he's been hurt a lot. Chris Dunn's been hurt a lot. So just a whole mess of factors there between the injuries, the management, bad trades. I mentioned the Doug McDermott trade in 2014 was a disaster. And then some other trades they've made and just missing out on free agents and all that kind of stuff. Just a whole mess of factors leading to just this year, just a total disaster because people thought the Bulls might be a playoff team this year. And then they started out bad. They were basically bad. They had like one decent stretch. They were mostly bad. And then the injuries hit again. Then All-Star Weekend, it kind of culminated where the All-Star Weekend is in Chicago. Like, it should be a great time to show off your franchise and all that in the city. And the Bulls were a total afterthought. There was the whole thing with LaVine on ESPN with fans chanting to fire Garpax. Like, at that point, it was just so blatantly obvious that something had to be done. And ownership finally moved forward, and they finally made some of these moves in their front office. And we'll see what they do with the roster, because Karnisov has talked about how he liked this young core that's in place. But, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Nobody should be untouchable. So we'll see if he comes in and makes any big moves once transactions can start up again, whenever that may be.
Jason, Jim Boylan has been a lightning rod for criticism, and understandably so. Not that he's had a ton to work with. You mentioned that the injuries there as well. He had a welcome to Chicago statement for Karnisov. I don't know how well that's going to play for him ultimately, but and it might be premature without knowing who the GM is going to be as far as a next coach. But is there any candidates you have on your radar, or who maybe Bulls fans would be interested in, anything like that that you have in mind?
So Adrian Griffin's been a name that's come up. I know Joe Colley said that there was some speculation there because Karnisov and Adrian Griffin played together in college at Seton Hall. Griffin's kind of been around the block. He was an assistant for Tom Thibodeau. He's with the Raptors now, so he's got a really good assistant coaching resume. And again, there's that ties with Karnisov. When I was talking on cash considerations with the Nuggets guys, he brought up Wes Unseld Jr. And I think he's an assistant in Denver, that he seems like he's a pretty good option. We'll see about maybe a guy like Kenny Atkinson, who just got fired from the Nets, surprisingly, because it seemed like he didn't mesh as well with the stars. But obviously, Kenny Atkinson helped develop the Nets team the last couple of years and develop that young talent and got them back to respectability, which helped them get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So some names like that. Like I said, I don't have like a huge laundry list. I'll have to look into it a bit more. But I wouldn't. When it comes to Jim Boylan, yeah, the statement he put out, like, obviously he's fighting for his job. He has to know that he's probably on the chopping block. When you bring in a new front office like this, like, you have to assume that the new guy's going to want to bring in his new coach. There's apparently no timetable on the decision there. It wouldn't surprise me if they take that slowly. Karnisov will want to build. You mentioned hire the new GM, build out that front office, and then maybe later, maybe if once a decision is made on the season, or if the season actually does finish later, maybe then they'll make a final decision on Boylan. But yeah, I would assume he'll be gone, and that they'll end up bringing in somebody else.
What do you see with this roster? What do you like about it? I know that there's still some young talent that has to be given some time to develop. Kobe White was a draft pick.
Sure.
I think the fans were excited about that. I know that they'd like to get higher than that 7 pick each and every year. Wendell Carter's got to stay healthy. Lauri Markkanen maybe hasn't gotten better like a lot of fans would have hoped over the last couple of years. You have the Otto Porter deal that probably going to opt into $28.5 million. I think I would too.
Wow.
But yeah. What do you see as far as their wiggle room with free agency? What could they potentially do? What are some positives maybe with what they have?
So like you look at the individual pieces, and a lot of them like seem like decent. Like, I mean, Zach LaVine had a borderline all-star year. They're obviously he's been kind of a polarizing player just because he's flashy. He puts up big numbers. He's never really impacted winning, but I think he's gotten better this season, or at least he's probably having the best year of his career. Like I said, borderline all-star. So he's on a reasonable contract. So, I mean, a solid, maybe not your number one guy on a good team. I think the Bulls still need that like superstar player, but he's still pretty good. You meant like Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen. I mean, that is like theoretically a promising front court. And again, I referencing back to the Nuggets expert I had on TJ McBride. He thinks Karnišovas will love that front court and would hopefully, maybe with a better coach, get more out of them. Maybe use Wendell Carter and his versatility a bit more. And then mentioned Kobe White. He had a rough start to his rookie year, but came on super strong before the season was suspended. So I mean, that looks nice as well. Like there are just questions about like while a lot of the pieces look nice, like. How does it all come together? And it clearly just hasn't yet because injuries have played a part of it. The offense really never meshed this season. And Lauri Markkanen, you mentioned the stagnation. Maybe you think that with a better coach, with better usage, maybe he'll break out of his shell. But I mean, some of that's on him as well. And you have to wonder just how good he actually is. So again, like I do wonder, like if he's gonna Karnišovas will come in, maybe make a few fringe moves. Like maybe they look to trade Thaddeus Young or like Tomas Satoransky or some of those other fringe guys. And then you hire a new coach, you go into next year and you kind of see what happens with this new coach. And then maybe if it doesn't work out again, maybe that's when you start seeing maybe a trade of Zach LaVine. Maybe you trade a Lauri Markkanen, who is up for an extension this summer. I would be surprised if he agrees to one. I just don't see him doing that when his value is at a low point. So while I'm not totally sure if he's going to come in and just like go blow everything up and all that, I guess it necessarily wouldn't surprise me. When a new guy comes in, he wants to implement his vision for the team. You never know what he could do. Nobody should be untouchable on this roster.
Jason, Pat, our guest, you just blew my mind when you said Thaddeus Young. I clipped my mic. I looked at Derek. I'm like, what? He's still playing? And Derek said he makes $13.5 million. Wow. Okay, Jason, that did literally blew my – well, not literally. I hope not. All right.
Yeah, Thad Young was he was really good last season with the Pacers, and the Bulls made him their top guy in free agency, and it just really hasn't worked out. Man. They have to trade him at the deadline. It wouldn't surprise if they try it again.
I'm an embarrassment pretty much to the show, but when the NBA talk comes around, it's really bad. All right, Jason, the draft. I don't know a lot about the NBA, but I know that the Bulls draft 7th every year of my life.
Basically.
It's incredible. So what are we looking at? I know some of the mock drafts I've looked at, mainly to see if Io and Kofi are going anywhere. I always stop at the Bulls, and it's always somebody from a different country that I've never heard of. Where do you think the Bulls will go? I mean, not specifically a player, unless you think that they're kind of angled in at one, but maybe more of a position, et cetera. What do you think they do with that 7?
Right, yeah. If they get 7 again, which they are number 7 right now, going whenever the lottery is. They do
that is
7
true. You've got the lottery. Yeah.
Get the number 1 pick. So, like, if nothing changes, they're going to end up with that 7 pick once again. Like, this draft is such a weird draft because it's viewed as down. I am definitely no draft expert. I said most college basketball I watch is basically all Illinois, so I'm definitely interested about Kofi and Io. So, like, if the Bulls got lucky and maybe they get into that number 1 slot or they move up high. My cash considerations co-host Ricky O'Donnell has been pushing for LaMelo Ball, which would certainly be entertaining at the very least if you bring in the youngest Ball brother. And then obviously you have other guys, Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman. Like,
yeah.
In the Bulls situation, when they have all these young guys, they seem like they're okay, but again, nobody's untouchable. I don't really think they should be drafting for a specific need. They just need a good player. So if they have a guy at number 7 or if they move up in the lottery, if they have a guy they really like, just go take him. Don't worry about position. Like, I know you have Kobe White at point guard. You have Zach at shooting guard. A lot of people like to look at the lineup and kind of fill that in with a draft pick. At this point, with where you are, you haven't gone anywhere in this rebuild. Just take whoever that best player available is. Again, as not necessarily a draft expert, I really couldn't tell you who that is, but maybe they'll get lucky and they'll move up and not draft number 7 again. Because if they do draft number 7, there's obviously, with this draft as kind of being what it is, and like we really don't know like how good it is. It seems like it's pretty down. Like there'll probably be plenty of options there. They could go in really any direction.
Sure.
One more for you, Jason. You said you mentioned You mentioned that you watch a lot of Illinois. I know you're dialed in on the NBA game as well. What do you make of Ayo Dosunmu's draft stock or Kofi? I know that we can see that how maybe he doesn't fit as a post big man in this space out NBA where you have to guard the three-point line or even be a threat to shoot from the outside. But with Ayo, were you surprised when ESPN puts out a mock and he's not in there? Or how do you kind of see those two translating potentially to the next level?
Kofi, I feel like he should come back. Like, I'd be surprised. Like, he's obviously got a really talented, a lot of potential, but he just doesn't seem ready. I mean, you never know. And especially with the way the NBA is going with centers, I would be surprised if he was, like, a first-round pick. I mean, maybe he leaves anyways. I feel like he'd come back. Ayo, that's definitely interesting. But, like, you guys know, just, like, the clutch gene and all that stuff and the shots right. He can do off dribble and in transition and the open NBA game especially, like, getting Ayo out in transition like that, like, that's seems really good. But then, I think it was Hoopsite really recently just kind of published a bunch of mock drafts all over, and I think the highest he was like 35 or 37. I think The Athletic had him, and then other places had him like later in the second round. I think some places had him not drafted at all. So that really makes this interesting because he came back this year with the whole unfinished business thing, and then they have a great year, and then they get the season tournament taken away from them with the suspension and all that. Like, If he's not a first-round pick, does he come back for another season and then maybe build himself up? Like, I feel like he's got to work in that jumper a bit, obviously. I feel like it got better as the year went on. But I don't know. He's a really interesting case. Like, selfishly, as an Illinois guy, I would love him to come back for another year. But obviously, if he thinks the going is the right decision, that'll be his call.
I try not to let myself think of Kofi and Ayo back on this team because I know that it's just I'm gonna let myself down in a hard way here when they don't. But it would be incredible. Jason, Pat, great stuff, buddy. Blogabowl.com, and also co-host of the podcast Cash Considerations. Follow him on Twitter @Bulls_J. That's J-A-Y. Jason, we'll do it again, my friend, maybe around draft time for NBA. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take it easy.
All right, buddy. That is Jason. Pat. Good stuff, man. Good breakdown on the Chicago Bulls and everything you need to know about that organization right now as they strive to kind of start working their way back up in the NBA. All right, we're going to come back to wrap things up. It is The Drive.
This episode of The Drive with Lonte and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at twomenchampagne.com for a free estimate.